Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, I got a beer.
You did?
I got a beer. It's a local beer. We know we've done this brewery before. This is Flying Dog from Frederick, Maryland, just up north, up I-270. What are we drinking?
We are drinking The Fear. It's an Imperial Pumpkin Ale. It's quite heavy. It sort of tastes like a stout type of beer, but quite tasty, and I'm sure it's meant to give you a fright based on one of the films we're maybe going to speak about.
Most likely our first film, which is called The Night House, which is a horror thriller, which should pair well with The Fear, which is 9%, by the way. It's a very strong beer.
It is a very 9%. Strong beer.
So let's start with The Night House. Something odd happened this week. We did not watch this film together. We didn't go to the theater together. In fact, we both watched it in our respective houses, on our respective screens. Didn't even watch it on the same night, I don't think. Yet in our reviews, which we did not collaborate on, we both mentioned the same thing. We both mentioned Patrick Swayze and the movie Ghost. I mentioned it because I thought, after watching this, Patrick Swayze did it right. He was considered. He had a touch of class. When you die and you need to figure it out, whatever it is, how can I interact with people? How can I pester Whoopi Goldberg? He was considerate. And you know what he did? He didn't turn the stereo on at 4 o'clock in the morning. He didn't rattle chains. He didn't squeak floorboards. He moved a penny. He's like, hey, dear, I don't want to scare you. I'm gonna move this penny. And that did it. She wasn't freaked out. The Night House, on the other hand,
it ain't Ghost. It ain't Patrick Swayze.
they did not go to charm school.
No.
Along with Patrick Swayze, The Night House has been around for a while for some people because it premiered at Sundance 2020, not 2021. So they shelved this for a little bit. Directed by David Bruckner, he's been around. He did something in 2017 called The Ritual. Didn't see it. Tell me, Hannah, why is this house at night? going bump in the night.
Well, it is. The Night House is a dream house on the lake, which is always a clue whenever you've got a dream house in the middle of the woods along by a lake. There's a good chance that there's going to be some horror involved. But this is a very creepy, unsettling story about this widow, played by Rebecca Hall, who I love Rebecca Hall. Anything that she's in, she actually elevates, I think, every movie that she's in, including this one. But she discovers, so her husband has died just recently, and she starts to discover that he was leading this secret life. And then she starts having really crazy dreams, and you're never quite sure if she's asleep or if she's sleepwalking or what's going on. But she ends up sort of being haunted by perhaps the house and the spirit of her dead husband and potentially some other people, and it's very creepy.
And I'm in the minority on The Night House. This is getting not rave reviews, but very, very good reviews. It has a very fresh tomato. Everyone's saying, I love the atmosphere. I love how eerie it is. Michael O'Sullivan in the Post said he actually had trouble sleeping that night. I didn't like it. I thought it was poorly written. I did not like how they wrapped it up. I thought they couldn't figure it out. They couldn't break their own code. They twisted themselves in a pretzel and just couldn't get out of it. The supporting characters are useless. Just straight up useless.
They're almost non-existent.
And they are there, and they're like a Greek chorus of, you're not well,
the concerned,
go to bed.
The concerned neighbor. The concerned best friend.
Von E. Curtis Hall pops up. I remember him from like Chicago Hope, and he's the police chief from Romeo and Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. He's got nothing to do. Yeah. Stacey Martin though pops up. She was in Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac, Volume 1, made a name for herself there. She's here and she has some scenery to chew. But then again, this is Rebecca Hall's film. And yes, I'm with you. I love Rebecca Hall. She was great. My favorite performance of hers is Christine, where she was the TV reporter who committed suicide on air. And she was also opposite Scarlett Johansson in Vicky Cristina Barcelona, the Woody Allen film, also across from Javier Bardem. That's what I really know her from and really like her from. And she's great here. She has to convince you that she's hugging the air. You know, she's got to hug the air, and it makes it, and she's convincing. Looks like she's hugging air. I believe it.
Oh, she's playing against, you know, it is amazing that she is showing her range by essentially having to play against nothing for large chunks of this film. I like her. I don't particularly like this film. A friend of mine saw it last night in Atlanta, raved about it.
Well, what is it? Why are we off here with the rest of the world?
I do think it's not necessarily the rest of the world, but I think those who already are inclined to like just a creepy horror movie.
Which I am. So
so I don't know then what your problem is.
No, but I mean, the vast majority of critics, the vast majority, they got the tone. They got the atmosphere. What is it that they're getting out of this that we just can't see?
Well, and I don't think we, you know, for us, it's completely different reasons, I would think. I mean, for me, this is just a genre that's not my cup of tea to begin with. I like the kind of horror ghost kind of movies that I like, aside from like a ghost with Patrick Swayze, is more of like the Poltergeist or A Quiet Place or The Conjuring. Those are the kinds of films that that I tend to sort of handle better in terms of the horror genre. To me, this was, if you imagine Ghost, it's this supernatural horror story instead of the romantic supernatural drama that that Ghost was. But if it did bring to mind another one that nobody really saw, but I thought was also like, remember, it was incredibly strange, was the one with Casey Affleck. It was called Ghost Story, maybe.
And
Rooney Mara was in it. And it was, he was like wandering around the house in a sheet. And he was like the dead husband or something. So I remember that one also just being very odd. And you had, and some people really liked it and others hated
it. That was art house horror. This is not odd. This is mainstream. My hypothesis is it's going to, and it will work better on the big screen. If it's really dark, you got nothing else going on except to focus, and I think the atmosphere would really permeate your soul than your couch.
It could be, because the friend who saw it last night did see it in a theater, in like one of those big theaters, and with probably surround sound, where you absolutely are probably immersed in that aura, so to speak. And again, it just it's not a genre that I generally would choose to pick. I do think maybe I would have been better with it if I had seen it in a theater. Similar to when I saw A Quiet Place 2 recently, I just felt that seeing it in a theater just absolutely made a huge difference in the intensity that you feel as it progresses. But story-wise, it just wasn't a story that particularly appealed to me. So, and I think that sort of is the same case with you, is that the narrative just wasn't necessarily anything that you latched onto.
I'm on board with husband unexpectedly commits suicide. Why? Let me go through his stuff. Things start getting weird. I'm on board. I'm just so sour on how it turned out. It wasn't brave. It could have gone in 8 different directions, and they chose the weakest one. And it doesn't even make sense. They just couldn't figure it out. It was just too complicated. That's my biggest problem with it.
Yeah. So my biggest problem is just that it wasn't anything that I would latch onto. It didn't break that barrier for me of a horror movie that I would want to see or unravel. And it's just there's just nothing light about it. And I usually try to find a little Patrick Swayze in every ghost movie that I see, and there's no Patrick here.
That's a high bar. All right, our second film of the episode is a documentary, The Lost Leonardo, or as some would call it, The Leonardo. Leonardo DiCaprio shows up. Hannah, how did he get lost? Are they talking about him?
I don't think they're talking about our Leo DiCaprio.
He shows up.
I think they're talking about, like, Da Vinci.
Oh,
so
that guy.
I think if you go back
no,
to, like,
Tom Hanks found
the
him.
1500s or something, I think we're in a different time zone. But, this was a documentary I actually started watching months ago during AFI Docs. So I'd gotten the link and then tuned out after a while and never got back to it. And I remember Artie Chick raved about it. She really, really enjoyed this film. And so this time around, I was like, I'm going to stick through it. And I'm glad I did. It's very interesting. It's it takes you deep into the art world, which we've seen a bunch of fiction and nonfiction type of films in the past few years that take you into that world. But what makes this different is that it's a documentary and you are discovering these oddball characters that all were part of the discovery of what became the highest price ever paid for a painting at auction. And it was what's considered to be the Lost Leonardo. It's the Salvatore Mundi. And I vaguely recall hearing about this painting and how it's believed to have been painted by Leonardo da Vinci, and it had been lost for forever and ever. And it became the most expensive painting ever sold at $450 million. And all I know is that I came out of this documentary going, what the heck? Why is that painting, why is anything sold for $450 million when I'm not even sure in the end that they were able to authenticate that it was indeed a Leonardo da Vinci painting? What did you get out of it, Charlie?
I got out of it that The Lost Leonardo is fascinating. It's a detective story based on a kind of a dry subject, art history and the provenance, that's my new word, the provenance of a painting, of a piece of art that was only discovered, air quote, in 2005 in New Orleans. So this thing made it from Italy to New Orleans.
For the whopping price of, what was it, like $1,500?
Yeah, you got it for like $1,100 and change. There's all sides and facets to this. So you've got Diane Modestini. She's the best, well, I don't know what you call it, cleaner slash restorer. So she gets her hands on this, and she cleans it. And when she cleans it, you get a good look at the underclothing of this painting, which is painted on horrible wood, and it's been run through the ringer over the years. This is the thing that was not taken care of in the used record store. It's got some scratches
and
on it.
It looks sort of like a morphing of Jesus Christ and Mona Lisa.
And so she gussies it up. And I guess you're allowed to do that in there. It's like, this is probably what it looked like. And when she was doing that, she said, you know what? This bit of the upper lip here, only one person in history could do that. Leonardo da Vinci. So she's the first one to say, this is Leonardo da Vinci. So first people buy it for $83 million. Then we get to the Swiss unicyclist, Yves Bouvier. He's got his own side plot in the whole thing. Then we get to the Russian oligarch. He's got his own side of the plot. And then up and up and up, keeps getting resold. You're right about there's a lot of other art films in this. I saw, the first one, the biggest one, is The Price of Everything, if you remember that from a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that one covered how we attach value to art and the greed and the absurdity of the art market, which is also front and center here. I saw Tim's Vermeer, which is How Do You Paint It? I saw Art and Craft, which was about an art forger. And I saw Tenet, which is about the free ports. At airports, you don't have to declare and tax your valuables if you leave it in a free port. That's also a big thing here. And you know who does not come out good in this film? Is the auction house Christie's. Yeah. They call this the male Mona Lisa. It's not.
No, but that's marketing.
Yeah, and
that
it's absurd.
That is marketing. But they explain it, and you go, yep, that's why people lined up to see this thing, was because you were in essence saying, it's the male Mona Lisa, that's the draw. So that's what marketing's all about.
And it actually comes out that it's kind of a lie. It's at least a stretch of the truth. And I learned why we're all fascinated with the Mona Lisa in the first place. I didn't know why we were. I thought it was just that critics agreed that it was the best painting ever made. It's not. It's not. It's because of Jackie Kennedy Onassis is why it's famous. I did not know it was because of Jackie.
Certainly
well
why
done,
it has,
madame.
Why it got the Americans involved. But I do think you thought of those very higher end type of art movies. It made me think of things like that we just saw, Burnt Orange Heresy, and the Velvet Buzzsaw. That one,
made
I
you
really,
think of Velvet Buzzsaw?
It totally made me think about
Leonardo didn't come to life, start killing people.
No, but when didn't Velvet Buzzsaw have a big thing about the art critic, like the pretentious art critic?
Yeah, that was Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes, and so there's the very comical, pretentious art critic in this documentary.
Or is he not pretentious? And he's the only guy with a level head.
He's fun, and he's the comic relief for me throughout that thing. But, and
by the way, you're talking about Jerry Saltz. And he's actually the one guy telling all of us, you fools are being hornswoggled. This is not a Leonardo.
Yeah.
They just want you to believe it is a Leonardo to make money.
Well, and then it reminded me a little of the Goldfinch. And then there's just all the little ins and outs about, does it matter if it's not really a Leonardo?
Yes.
Does it? You know, but the guy who causes the ridiculous markup, you know, he's like capitalism at its best. Like, he just convinces, you know, somebody wants this painting, fine, I'll go and get it for you. Oh, and yes, I negotiated a price of X, Y, and Z, but hey, and with my 200% commission, I'm going to ride off in the sunset.
Capitalism at its best, or capitalism at its worst?
Well, greed. It really is very, very much about greed and just sort of the con that goes on. And it was fascinating to me, like, it was going to be displayed in the Louvre, but then it wasn't. And if it wasn't put in the last room along with the Mona Lisa, then...
Careful.
Sorry. Yeah, so there are things, without giving away, it's really crazy to be thinking so much about having to not be giving spoilers in a documentary. But it does play out a bit like an art thriller, and as much as I'm not all that much into art history, I could understand. Certainly, this is a great case study for any art history students. I think it's a good one to show in art school and to dissect.
Yeah, well said about it being a thriller. It's so well made. It just moved. It had great pacing. It had momentum. And this could be, in other hands, a very dry subject. And like, and then the Seven Years' War began, and the painting moved. And no, and it's not. It's edge of your seat. What's going to happen next?
But here's what's really crazy: is have you gotten the email yet about a movie called Savior for Sale, Da Vinci's Lost Masterpiece?
I have no idea.
That is coming out in like 3 weeks. Mm. Another documentary, a French documentary on this exact same painting. And so I am going to be fascinated to see how they compare. And the idea that both are being released within a month is just insane, that both are focusing on the same painting.
I feel bad for the second film.
Yeah.
For just coming on the heels. Now, maybe it's for different audiences. Maybe no one over here will see the French film, and maybe the French won't see this film. I don't know. Maybe that one will focus more on the Louvre's aspect.
We shall find out soon.
Oh.
Oui.
All right. We took last week off.
For Charlie's birthday. Happy birthday,
blame
Charlie.
Blame me. I just went in the mood. let's do a little catch-up. Let's do a little quick little catch-up. You saw the two biggest movies. I just skipped them. I didn't go. So, the one that was probably getting the most talked about, the most buzz, is Aretha Franklin. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. What's going on with Jennifer Hudson?
That one's actually a little bit divisive. I think that everyone agrees, hands down, Jennifer Hudson is remarkable musically. Her talent is incredible. And so, she absolutely nails the singing and the music for playing Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul. And Aretha Franklin handpicked her to play her.
Must be nice. But
where this film then sort of didn't work for me, so it works on a musical level, but it absolutely did not work in terms of just the one after another biopic cliches that all got thrown into the mix here. It felt like everything we had just seen with Tina and Ike Turner, with the Tina Turner documentary, the stuff we had just seen with Billie Holiday. And so every other aspect of this film just felt so just worn and stale. And so it just, it didn't, the script, I think, failed Jennifer Hudson to some degree here. I mean, people who go see it, who love Aretha Franklin's music, are still going to enjoy the music aspect of this film. But the rest of it, even though the performances by a lot of the supporting characters are actually really good, Forest Whitaker is in it as her Baptist preacher father, I just felt that the script didn't hold together all that well for her backstory. And I was so on it. So I thought Jennifer Hudson is amazing and sings amazingly well in a so-so movie.
That's exactly why I didn't want to see it. I knew a formula biopic was coming my way, and I had no endurance or fortitude to sit through it.
Well, and the thing is that I kept thinking back to her in Dreamgirls, for which she actually won Best Supporting Actor, Actress in for Dreamgirls. That script gave her that moment. Like it was built for a moment. And so to me, I can't imagine that this to me is not like an Oscar performance. It's a performance victory, but the rest of the script I thought just kind of fell flat.
She's no Andra Day. the other one you saw was Free Guy. That was on my top five most anticipated films of the year, and I still didn't go see it. How's Ryan Reynolds doing?
That one was just fun. You know, if you had to just pick, the only problem is Free Guy is only in theaters, so you have no choice right now but to either see it in the theater or to wait. This would be, to me, it's a great, like, airplane movie. When we're ever able to travel again and you're stuck on a plane and you're looking through what's going to kill 2 hours and be entertaining, Free Guy is it. It's very goofy, but it's also sincere, and it's fun. And if you're into gaming, you're going to get way more out of it. I'm not into gaming. So it took me a lot longer than a lot of those around me to just sort of absorb what was happening in this virtual world. You and I both saw, I think I remember, Ready Player One.
Liked it.
And so we like that. This is a much more lighthearted, it's a similar vibe in terms of being inside that world of a game. But this is our boy, Ryan Reynolds, who is just the every guy. And he is really, truly the every guy here. He plays a guy named Guy, who is this sort of nondescript bank teller, also known as the blue shirt guy. And he becomes the hero. He discovers that he's actually this background player in a video game, a so-called NPC. I had no idea. Did you know what an NPC was? So non-playable character. I guess if you play these games, you know that. But he discovers that he's an NPC in this open world video game called Free City. And he one day spots the girl of his dreams and ends up following her. And it opens up this whole new world to him of discovering that he's sort of living a life in this video game. And then it becomes him sort of being brought into this mission to save Free City. And also the characters, guy and gal who had actually created the game, whose intellectual property was potentially stolen by none other than Taiki Waititi, who plays like the bad guy in this movie, and he's so fun. So I think you probably would definitely enjoy Free Guy, but it's not like a run out and see it if you're not into that whole gaming world. But it is absolutely, if you took Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool and you put him into more of a PG-friendly outfit. He's in blue shirt and khakis instead of his spandex. And he's, very good guy all around, as opposed to the snark of Deadpool. But it's Ryan Reynolds doing what Ryan Reynolds does at his best. And it was just a fun escapist movie.
Your description reminds me of both Wreck-It Ralph and the Emoji Movie.
Yes. Yeah, but with a little bit more live action in there.
So the one I did see, because I didn't have to go to theaters, and I'm not going to theaters right now, by the way. This is why I didn't go see those, because you Delta variant people are ruining theaters for me. Anyways, I saw Coda, which is on Apple TV Plus, and I loved everything about Coda. Mm-hmm. It was a huge Sundance winner, and I think it even set the all-time record for money spent on a Sundance film. Way to go, Apple. Family of four, three are deaf, one's not. It's her story of her being the hearing person in her family. She also happens to be a senior in high school, so tumultuous. She likes to sing. Her family doesn't know about singing. They don't know about music. They're isolated from the community. She's their transport to the community. They're fishermen. She doesn't want to fish. She wants to sing. So there's lots of...
And go to school.
Do I help my family, or do I do what's best for me, for what I want to do? And it's heartfelt, and it's heartwarming, and everybody who sees Coda loves Coda. For me, best supporting actor, Troy Kotsur as the dad, and best actress, I don't remember the actress's name.
Marley Matlin?
No.
Oh.
No. She's a supporting actress, and she wasn't that good. I'm talking about...
not that good.
The girl. The main girl.
Amelia Jones.
Outstanding.
She is. She is outstanding. But I think all of... you've got the Marley Matlin, who was... You know, she won an Oscar for Children of Lesser God.
And she's playing the same role. Yeah, I saw it.
But she's not playing the same role. I do love the dynamic. There's a family dynamic that's really fun here. And authentic. And so she was very... The thing is, Marley Matlin was going to be cast no matter what. These other two deaf actors who play the father and the brother, without Marley Matlin in this film to say, I want true representation, these roles can be played by deaf actors, I want deaf actors in all these roles, it wouldn't have happened without her. And so I think it's great, and it succeeded in doing exactly what she was aiming for. It reminded me a little bit, like, it's not nearly as gritty as like Sound of Metal was, and so that's sort of one that I thought of. But it's a total crowd pleaser. It's very moving. If you need to absolutely have a Kleenex handy near the end, even though you know it's coming, if you've got any kind of heart at all, Charlie, then you need, there's no way you don't well up a little bit towards the end of that movie.
I think some dust blew off of the bookshelves of a heart somewhere in there.
Yeah, so it really, Apple TV Plus has been the go-to. I mean, it's like, good on them. They got themselves a winner here. And I could understand why it won so big at Sundance, because it just is a crowd pleaser, and it's got that heart and the representation. And it's being shown in theaters and on Apple TV Plus. In both cases, it's being streamed open caption so that deaf audiences can go as well and not need extra special equipment to watch this movie. And so it really is about opening up this experience for deaf audiences and hearing audiences to be able to watch it together.
Speaking of heartwarming and Hannah's wheelhouse, let's hop over to TV mention season 2, episode 5 of Ted Lasso.
Yes.
You texted me this word before I saw the episode. I'm like, huh, okay, that's a thing. And then I saw it and I'm like, oh God, this is Hannah's episode. Hannah, what did you text me?
I think I texted you rom-communism.
Rom-communism. So the episode we didn't talk about, episode 4 last week, everyone got in a tizzy because it's the Christmas episode. I mean, they knew this was going to be released in August, and they still said, hey, we're going to make a Christmas episode. And it was Love Actually. Yes. They remade Love Actually. And in episode 5, they remade romantic comedies.
Every other romantic comedy. It's like You Had Me at Hello type stuff. There was a lot of Jerry Maguire.
And they used in this one. They used Roy Kent to do it.
This season so far, I think you almost have to sort of have this show needs to be called Roy Kent as opposed to Ted Lasso. I think this has just been a breakout season for Roy Kent. And so, it's just a classic. It's called Rainbow, and the other sort of theme that runs through this one is Nate finally gets a moment.
Yeah,
that's kind of lame. I thought it was going to be bigger, frankly, from how it started off, But it was really more, I think, just a way to draw in Keely and Rebecca into the story a little bit more, because they're sort of teaching him how to be a little more assertive. But in the end, this is all about Ted needing something from Roy, and just about the way they go about it, and the rom-com references. If you are a rom-com fan, oh my God. Between it being Ted Lasso, which is just a series that every single episode so far has just been such a joy to watch for me. Yes, having the back-to-back rom-com episodes has been really fun. So it's just, they keep rolling along with these.
There's a TV series that just finished that everyone is now raving was the series of the summer. And I'm talking about The White Lotus on HBO Max. I didn't watch it, but apparently everyone on Twitter did. Good Lord. And I'm still not going to go back and watch it. But everyone who finished it up says that we're now going to start on Hulu, 9 Perfect Strangers. And I didn't want to watch that one either. And then I looked at the cast. And I sat down and I watched episode 1. Because, Hannah, yes. let me read you this cast.
Yeah.
Nicole Kidman. Mm-hmm. Melissa McCarthy. Michael Shannon. Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah.
Samara Weaving, Luke Evans, Regina Hall.
I mean, that is a killer
Holy
cast.
Holy bejesus.
Uh-huh.
Brought to you by one David E. Kelly. Where's he been, by the way?
I don't know, but he did everything in the 80s and 90s.
Well, I looked him up because I remember him from The Practice and Ally McBeal. Mm-hmm. I had to remind myself that he was also responsible for Doogie Howser.
Wow.
Chicago Hope. Ooh, second mention
They're
in this
rebooting
episode,
Doogie, by the way.
And he also did... Big Little Lies, he didn't do it. It's based on a novel, a 2018 novel by the same author as Big Little Lies.
Yeah.
And actually, he might have. I don't remember who did that. I know that was like Nicole and Reese.
Right.
But, so here we got a 6-episode miniseries. I'm 1 episode in. I'm going to go back, but they're all annoying. All these characters are annoying.
I know. I mean, it's just one of those things where... You know, Ted Lasso, I can stick with. It's a half hour, you know, each one's a half hour, and it's just a very quick escape. These other ones seem like there's too much thinking that I might have to do. White Lotus, I've seen tons and tons of just raves about, and I just absolutely have no interest whatsoever in seeing it.
No.
And then same with, the cast of, what's it called?
Nine Perfect Strangers.
The cast seems awesome, but I'm going to wait. Maybe that'll become a binge, but is that an hour long? See, if they're like hour-long episodes.
It's more than Ted Lasso.
All right. But, and I'll just make quick reference. The other one we didn't see this week, I'm usually there when it's a Hugh Jackman movie.
I was wondering why you didn't see that. Because you could have seen it. It's on HBO Max.
Yes. But I actually started looking at the reviews before I would have had an opportunity to watch it on HBO Max.
You're going to skip
And that
your boy?
Was enough for
He's
me.
Your boy.
He's my boy, but I think I'd rather go back and watch The Greatest Showman again.
What are we talking about, by the way?
So, Reminiscence, and that's the other thing. Nobody could figure out exactly how to say it or spell it, like, very quickly.
You can't figure out how to say Reminiscence.
Reminiscence.
What's wrong with Reminiscence?
It doesn't exactly roll off the tongue when you're doing a review. But, so it's in theaters. It's streaming on HBO Max. But, you know, he plays some private investigator of the mind. And there's some violent conspiracy in play. And I figure I got enough Dark and Twisted this week.
Sounds like with Minority Report.
but weirder. So I figure I got enough twisty, dark stuff from The Night House that I would have had to have heard, because I did not get into the theater to see Reminiscence, I would have had to hear something really positive to get me to then try and watch it on HBO Max. But now I'm just thinking, based on everything that I heard, that... it's not worth two hours of my time.
If we are in the small minority of The Night House, maybe you'll be in the small minority of Reminiscence.
I suppose. But it's people I trust I generally can get an idea, a pretty good idea. And again, Hugh Jackman's my boy also because
he is.
When he's playing a certain type of role or when he's singing. So Reminiscence has none of that. it looks like it's just a pretty dark thing. And it was bad enough having to watch him in Prisoners, which was a very good movie, was brutal.
That was a while ago.
And that was brutal. That was a brutal Hugh Jackman watch.
It was.
I don't think this one is...
Jake Gyllenhaal movie,
yes,
by the way.
So I don't think this one is really meant to be as brutal. It's just... it just doesn't have... It's just not what I want. I'm waiting to see Hugh Jackman on Broadway next year in The Music Man. That's my Hugh Jackman. That'll be fun.
No need to really rehash it, but we finished Schmigadoon. Yeah. The penultimate episode is better than the final episode. They just wrapped it up.
I enjoyed it, though. It's a really good,
Kristen Chenoweth had her song. It was awesome. It kind of peaked the series, and then they just kind of finished
it. It's a decent binge. If you just want to...
No, I'm not saying anything bad about the series. I'm just saying that final sixth episode was...
it's
all right.
But it was sort of like a rom-com. You had to end it the way you had to end it.
And I watched episode 3 of Watch the Sound with Mark Ronson. Oh, right. This one's about reverb, and they finally bring up Amy Winehouse. I was wondering when they're going to... Because he's known for producing Amy, so they finally brought her up. And reverb, not as good as sampling.
Which probably wasn't as good as what was the first one.
Auto-tune.
Auto-tune.
No, sampling was much better than auto-tune.
Yeah, so I'll leave that one to you. And again, that's your wheelhouse, not mine. So I'm waiting for another Schmigadoon.
Next week, the remake of Candyman by our boy, Jordan Peele.
Yes.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And that sounds like your genre.
I don't know. No, it doesn't. Not at all. But I will watch it anyway, just so that we have something to talk about.
Well,
there's
a COVID movie coming out next week as well that I really don't want to
watch.
Oh, well,
I figured you were going to ask for it. Between horror and COVID, really, what more could you want? Mm. I don't know. I have to look and see if I know what that one is. But I skipped the wildfires one, which I actually looked pretty good. But there was one, it was something about the California wildfires from back in like the paradise time. But I felt... That was another one where I just sort of have maxed out on bad news of things. Just I want feel good. That's why Free Guy was just a lot of fun. I need a little more escapist, and why the rom-com infused Ted Lasso was so much fun.
Well, best film of the week, other than Ted Lasso, is The Lost Leonardo. You got to see this. It's just riveting.
It's certainly different. So if you're into documentaries, this is one that that will keep you entertained.
Well, thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.